Hey, welcome to the new CNADHD podcast. I'm your host, Liz Lewis, and I don't want to produce another boring podcast.
I don't know if you've noticed this, but if you go in iTunes, there are like 100 podcasts now about ADHD. Seriously, do it. Look, you'll be shocked. And I don't want to do the same thing that everybody else is doing. The CNADHD podcast is your place to get the best information and hear from the best experts in the field of ADHD. I take all this information and I make it understandable, actionable, and hopefully a little fun. It does not suck.
Welcome, welcome to episode 314 of CNADHD. So I get at least one question per week, probably more, about meal planning. And my response is almost always the same. I decided I wanted to ask someone who knows a little bit more about nutrition than I do. So I approached my friend, Anna Rubano, who is a holistic health coach, to talk a little bit about ADHD, nutrition, meal planning, feeding a family, picky eaters, all of those things. And it was a really fun episode to record. I do plan, when I write the accompanying blog post, I will put some more detailed information about how I meal plan, and I will link to Anna. This is a good one, so listen through to the end. I think you will enjoy it.
Okay, Anna Rubano. Did I say your name right?
Yes, Rubano.
Welcome to the show, then.
Hi, we're recording. Yay!
The last time we talked, we had this great conversation. And like I said, we both sounded so smart. And then I looked down at like the 45-minute mark or something and was like, wait a minute, this is not recording.
Yeah. But I, you know, like I said, I think it's fine because I get to chat with you twice. So that's twice the fun for me. So all good. It's all good.
Well, I'm glad it's fun for you.
Well, talking like this is fun. It's not like other things.
Sometimes it's harder to find than you would think. I try to find interesting podcasts, but it's harder than you would think sometimes. Okay.
Okay.
So we had this great conversation all about nutrition and feeding a family. But first, before we, you know, rehash everything we already talked about, tell me again, I know your story, but I'm just going to, for the listener,
sure.
Tell me again what your relationship is with ADHD.
Okay. So my history with this is I would not know that I have it if it wasn't for my son. So even when this kid was born, you know, he was tough to handle. Let's just say he had sensory issues as a baby, which we didn't realize were sensory issues. And by the age of three, my husband realized this before I did. He was actually diagnosed with ADHD and some sensory issues. My husband is a licensed clinical social worker, so he kind of figured it out way before I did. And then, you know, he had to kind of gently tell me that this was the case, even though my mommy gut was telling me something's not right. You know, when I could, not that you want to compare, but when I compared him to other little kids, he didn't do the same things as other little kids did. So that was mind blowing. But I really didn't think of it further till he was a little bit older, like I want to say five or six-ish, where after we had just moved from New York to Florida, and once the dust settled, you know, I had been doing a little bit of reading about how ADHD could be hereditary and you can pass it on. And so I'm looking at my husband and I'm looking at myself and I'm like, well, he got it from one of us and I don't think it's you. So I wonder if it's me. And that's when I went down the rabbit hole of kind of figuring out what that looks like, because I didn't feel like I looked like my child. You know, he was a driven motor. He never sat still. Even with meals, he would run, grab food and go. Like the kid could barely just sit down for a meal. So I didn't think I looked like that, but I was intrigued. So as I was reading about what it looks like in girls and reading about what it looks like in adult women, it was the big aha moment. It really basically explained my whole life. And that was tough. After I realized that, and after I had done like a whole bunch of answering of like clinical questionnaires about whether or not you have it or not, blah, 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 and figuring out that I do, I kind of was like, yeah, okay, whatever, moving on now. Like, I didn't stop to accept it. I just kind of was like, well, I don't want this to be a thing. I'm just going to move on with my life. Well, that didn't work. So as the, 2 years had passed after that, I felt no matter what I was doing nutritionally, no matter what I was doing with my lifestyle, I still felt this chronic stress and this thing like I was, like my body was constantly just overwhelmed, something I couldn't explain. And it forced me to kind of go back and really pay attention to what this is about and embrace the ADHD diagnosis and really honor it and say, okay, what is this? Let me learn about this because I can't keep running from it. So that's my background with it. And so it's really helped me to figure out why my childhood looked like the way it did, why my teenage years looked the way it did, and even how I process now and how I do life now. It's really big aha moment. It was very emotional too. Very emotional.
I mean, some people go years without acknowledging it. And then some of them go through that anger phase. So you don't sound as angry as I've heard some people describe when they realize that they've had this, you know, forever.
Yeah. You know, for me, I feel more sad.
Yeah.
Sad for me because growing up, I really felt stupid. I felt very less than mediocre or just mediocre, even though, you know, there was a constant war within myself. Part of me could recognize there was some uniqueness and wonderful things about me, but then there was the other part that just failed. I felt like failed to thrive in some areas or just really struggled to get there. And I did struggle in school with processing information. And I have a very vivid memory of being in the first grade and my teacher calling me stupid. And you could get away with things back then, apparently.
Yeah, right? Like that would never fly now.
No, it would never fly today. But so if my teacher said it, then it must be true, right? So I basically grew up thinking, oh, well, I must be stupid. And this is as far as I'm ever going to get with my ability to do whatever. I had, just as a side note, you know, I went to NYU University. And I bumped into someone from high school. And when they saw me there, they basically looked at me and went, what are you doing here? As to say, you're not smart enough to be in this school. How the heck did you get in? So that's what had followed me my whole life, you know, not being looked at as this, you know, very smart person. And so this ex-high school classmate, you know, just looking at me with the most profound look of how the heck are you here? You know, so that just basically tells you my life right there in a nutshell. And to know that there was actually, no, I'm not stupid. I'm actually quite smart. It's just I do things differently. My brain works differently. And for me, that's where the sadness came because I have been so hard on myself my entire life. And people, former bosses, friends, they say, the first thing they'll say, you are so hard on yourself.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was just a personality thing when it just actually just ties into all of it. And the more I read, the more accounts I read, and the more women with ADHD that I speak to, I want to cry because I'm like, okay, so all of this is familiar. All of this is real. All of this is happening to other people besides me. This isn't just me being crazy or whatever, this is real. And that was just both sad and at the same time enlightening. So I don't have time to be angry. I feel like I've been angry at myself for such a long time and not treating myself with a whole lot of love or grace. Then now it's just like, okay, let me learn as much as I can learn and let me choose what I need to choose so I can be a functional human being with this and move forward and help as many people as I can with what I do as a holistic health coach who happen to have this diagnosis.
I'm really thrilled that you then wanted to learn more about it and that you will talk about it because I'm still running into a ton of women, no matter how much some of us come out, you know, about it and we start talking about it. Sari Solden and Terry Matlin, there are books and all kinds of stuff happening.
Yeah.
But there is still a large number of women who don't, they either are actively choosing not to acknowledge or they're hiding. And there's going to be a whole section, I think, about hiding in Sari Solden and Michelle Frank's book coming out. But I'm always so happy when somebody's like, I just wanted to know as much as possible.
Yeah.
Because I feel like people go two ways with it. They either shut it down. It's like blinders. I just can't. Yeah. Or I can't even share it with my family and loved ones. And right. then there's the rest of us that are like, hey, I need to know. I need to understand. You know, we're very curious. So yeah, I think you're one of my people anyway.
Well, I think it's like the Matrix, you know, which pill are you going to take?
Yes.
Go back or are you going to go forward and just keep going? I just love comparing life to the Matrix because that's how I feel a lot of the times. It's like, once you know, how do you not know it anymore? You know, you can't unsee, you can't unhear, you know. So you can run for a while and sure, you might even try to hide for a while, but it catches up to you. And I feel like I've spent my entire life just running on like a hamster wheel. So I don't want to run away from it. I want to run towards it, embrace the heck out of it without it being like, let me hold my banner. And this is what I am, you know, no, but in a sense of saying, this is a part of me. It's okay. Let's break the stigma of it. Let's let people know that boys aren't the only ones that have it. And it looks very different, very different. Very different. And people are shocked, you know, like just shocked to hear that, you know, if they don't know me, like, you're not the type of, I'm like, oh, well, but I am. I so am, you know, just because you don't see the chaos in my head doesn't mean it's not there.
Exactly.
So I think, you know, I think that, you know, and me being a holistic health coach, I'm the first one to like be excited about when I see people embrace different nutritional paths and they connect the dots. Well, it's like the same enthusiasm. I'm connecting the dots in my life as to how things and why things work the way they did. Plus, I have an added incentive. I have a child and he is looking to me to be okay. Because I'm going to be the only one that, unless he meets other people, but right now in his world, I'm it. I am the person with ADHD and he needs to learn how to cope and how to deal from me. Because if I don't have it figured out, how can I expect that little boy to figure it out?
I had someone say to me one time, I knew I had ADHD, but I wasn't treating it at the time. And I was talking to a parenting coach about my son's issues.
Yeah.
And the person kind of stopped me and said, no, wait a minute, you know, you have ADHD, but you're not doing anything about it. And I was like, yeah, I've known since I was 11. Like, I know. And she's like, the best thing you can do for your son is to start to treat your ADHD.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, you're right. Cause this was someone I really respected. And I was like, okay, you're right.
Yeah. And I 100% feel exactly the same. And this is coming from a person who has tried everything nutritionally, you know, lifestyle wise to kind of manage whatever the symptoms that I didn't know that I was having of this, the chaos of ADHD. And you get to the point, you're like, okay, well, I'm down to basically eating these foods and I'm doing this. What more can I possibly do that I'm not doing? I must be missing something.
Yeah.
Because my body's feeling chronically stressed. And it doesn't matter how good you eat or how many, you know, meditation exercises you do. If you don't look straight into the face of whatever that chronic stress is, especially in the form of a diagnosis like ADHD, your body's always going to feel like it's being attacked, you know, and under that type of stress. And that will cause inflammation and a whole bunch of other things that, you know, we don't want to have to deal with physically. So,
well, I was going to ask you, how did you land on holistic health coaching?
Yeah, that's a very interesting story. I talk about that more in the book I helped co-author, Our Transformative Journey, Our Gift of Healing to the World, which is 21 holistic health coaches that basically share their transformation story. And one of my favorite people, Mark, you know, at Wellness with Mark, he's one of the co-authors. In fact, he's helped me a lot with my ADHD journey. He's how I found you and a whole bunch of other people. But we all came together and shared our transformation stories and how we got to where we are now as coaches. I had all my life, I had this very strong, intuitive, empathetic kind of way of being, but I struggled with a lot of stuff internally and self-confidence and insecurity, which make more sense now to me that I realized about the ADHD. But as I was even writing my chapter, ADHD was not in the picture just yet. Well, I mean, it was, but it wasn't. When I have not followed my gut or my instincts in my life, it has caused me to have more health issues than I necessarily needed to go through, because I didn't listen to what I knew in myself was not in alignment with what I believed or what I thought. That happened, and that you can, that's in the book, but basically when I was around 19, 20, I made a decision that really affected my life, but I didn't realize how much more until my health started to tank by symptoms showing up, symptoms that I never had before. And even though afterwards that situation was done, my gut health was already compromised, because, you know, you hold your stress in your gut, and all those neurotransmitters, all those feelings, all, you know, the serotonin, all that good stuff, it's in the, you know, it gets produced in the gut. And so being chronically stressed like that does not help you. Eating bad food like I was does not help you. Like, I was not a healthy eater. I ate processed food. I love to eat out. I ate garbage. I drank soda, all the things, you know what I mean? Like, I just was not a healthy person. So the accumulation of all of that led me to get so sick that by the time I was 27, I was being treated for chronic sinus headaches, sinus infections and headaches, and had extreme fatigue where I could not stand for more than 5 minutes. So if I had to be going to my boss's office and him talking to me, I'd need to sit down. I had things like crawling skin and just weird brain fog. My memory was going, like, just really bad things. And when I tried to figure out what was going on, conventional doctors weren't really helpful at the time. I felt like I was just not getting anywhere until I went to see a holistic doctor. And they basically said, hey, I think you have an overgrowth of yeast. Let's test it out. We did. And I was off the charts. And so I did a protocol, which kind of detoxed my body and got me back on the right track. And that was my first kind of experience of, oh, what we eat matters. The real connection came was after my son was born. I had gained a lot of baby weight with him. I was on bed rest for the last month with him too, so that didn't help. And I wanted to lose the weight. So I went to a nutritionist and they put me on 1,000 calories a day. But not necessarily telling me what to eat, just how many calories I should be eating. So you can find anything for 1,000 calories. You can have, you know, microwavable meals and processed foods. And so, you know, in the effort to make it fast, I did that. I lost weight like crazy, but I was even worse for wear. And it didn't help my kind of, I have like OCD tendencies. I didn't like the fact that I had to count. It was feeding that too. And I said, this is not good for me. So my friend actually introduced me to an elimination diet. And she told me, I've eliminated this, 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 and this. And at first I'm like, I feel sorry for you. But then I felt like I really should try it. And when I did, that's when the light bulb went off for me. I removed all the things. I removed gluten, dairy, soy, corn. I went to low sugar. And when I started to put them back, oh, and eggs. And when I put them back in, I was amazed at how crappy those foods made me feel. So that's when I got it. That's when I started getting passionate, when I realized that the foods that we eat can have such an effect. I didn't have to count calories anymore. I did not need to scrutinize every bite. As long as I knew what I was cooking with or what I was making, and it actually made me more of a passionate cook and foodie, because now I had to get creative. Now I had to find a new way of making food delicious and healthy. So that's how I first started. And then it just went on from there, getting more interested in gut health, because that's how I started. And so I just kept reading and researching and found my way to, you know, the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, IIN. And lo and behold, became a holistic health coach, where didn't even know that what they were a few years ago. And then, you know, became one. There have been times when I've been eating a certain way that people have actually noticed, oh, you seem so much like calmer and more even keeled. I'm like, yeah, it's because I'm not eating sugar and I'm not eating, you know, simple carbs and things like that. So people started to make that connection, and so did I. And that's just where my passion grew and grew and grew for it, because there's really, even though with the world of Instagram and everything, there's a lot of healthy people out there, But so many people still don't realize that what they eat is having such a tremendous effect on them, diagnosis or not.
They make fun of me about my eating habits, and they're not as good as yours, but my eating habits and my exercise habits. People are like, you're a little obsessive. And I'm like, but if it works for me, then why criticize it?
I find that most people criticize because they're taken from what it says about themselves, and they're feeling bad because they think they're getting the subliminal message that you're judging them for not doing what you're doing. And so they always feel like they need to criticize. And I've had people and friends and family do the same thing. And now they're coming to me for, you know, advice. So at some point it does connect for some people. And when it doesn't, you just move on. You have to do what's right for you.
Well, I cyber stalked you. Now I always tell people I cyber stalk everybody, like on Instagram or on your website. Like cyber stalk, but I'm a harmless stalker. I just, you know,
good to know.
What I like about, I did not look at, you know, all your recipes and everything, but what I kind of like about your Instagram feed and your website is that none of the food to me looks complicated, and I'm not a cook.
Yeah. No, I keep it simple for various reasons. One, I'm a mom with two young kids and a very busy life. So nobody got time for 10 ingredient recipes. As much as I would love to just take a day and experiment with all that, no. Sorry, that's not real life for me right now. So that's reason number one. Reason number two, digestive-wise, it is much better for your digestive system when you have simple meals that don't have a lot of things in them, so your body can break it down. And I also like to show, especially like clients who visit my feed or just new people, you can still eat healthy, eat delicious, and don't have to feel like you're missing out on life. You know, there's a really funny commercial my husband and I crack up. I forget what it's for. I think it's like one of those protein bars, and you see a sad man sitting in the corner eating a piece of lettuce because, you know, I think his wife put him on a diet or something. And I'm like, dude, that's just not the way it is. I think to myself, well, there's got to be other people like me who don't have a lot of time, but still want to know what it looks like to eat healthy and non-boring foods.
Well, and that's the thing. ADHDers have issues with boredom, right?
Yes.
We have big issues with boredom. And then our other thing is, and I get probably at least one or two emails a week about this, and we discuss it in my private group all the time, the fact that the planning ahead is very difficult.
Yeah.
And you can have the best of intentions, but, you know, with ADHD, intentions mean nothing because it doesn't always lead to action.
Right.
So one of the things I wanted to ask you was, how do you stock a pantry? Because most people that I talk to are either avoiding shopping altogether, or they go shopping but without any real plan. They just go to the store and just grab stuff, and then they go home, but they don't have a plan of what to do with any of it. And like, how do you stock a pantry and not make yourself nuts?
See, this is funny because this is the one thing that I don't have a problem with as an ADHD. I'm the opposite. I'm such a planner. And so I use lists. I don't leave the house without a list, but not just any list. It's not just a list of like, oh, I need four apples and this, and whatever. It is, what am I planning to make for the week? So I have recipes in my head that I'm, or meals that I'm planning to make. So I get the ingredients for those meals. And then that way I will make the food for those, you know, I'll have what I need on hand to make those meals. I always have, we're not really big red meat eaters, but like I'll have some grass-fed ground beef to make like sauce and meatballs. That is something my whole family, I don't really eat it, but my family, my kids and my husband will eat it. And having a Sicilian mother-in-law, I better have that in the house every other Sunday or close to it, right? So that's always in the house, you know, crushed tomatoes and that and whatever I need for that. Chicken, you know, good clean chicken, as much as I can have. And what I typically do is I use my crock pot. My crock pot is my best friend. One of these days I'm going to splurge and get myself one of those instant pots with the, you know, they have a really cool one now. We could put like an air fryer lid on top. And so you can convert it to, I know. And I'm like, this is what I need in my life right now. But anyway, anything to make it easier. So I will actually just make plain chicken breast in the crock pot, plain, with a little lemon juice, you know, chicken bone broth, and salt and pepper. And the reason I keep it plain is because not everybody here likes to eat chicken the same way. So like my daughter, she likes mayonnaise. So I'll make it like a chicken salad for her. I make this avocado dressing. They all like to dip the chicken in that. My husband's kind of a plain guy. So he'll have it just plain with a couple side dishes. But that way I'm able to customize it for everybody. And me, I like the hot sauce. So I'm going to put the hot sauce on there. You know what I mean? But, you know, not everybody likes it spicy. But this way I have the bulk of the meal and I can customize it to their taste bud preferences without having to make four different types of chicken dishes.
Do you think it's okay to just have like two or three proteins picked out for the week?
Absolutely. I don't ever do more than that. I'll do like wild salmon, chicken, and I'll have always like good clean eggs on hand. But I don't go crazy. We budget. So we like to be, you know, not overspend, obviously. And so I try not to get anything I don't need. I have extra snacks in the house because someone's always munching on something in here, whether it's the kids or the husband.
Yes.
But even with the snacks, like, okay, so it's not my favorite corn, but like if I'm going to get a bag of tortilla chips, it's going to only, the only ingredient needs to say organic corn tortilla chips. Mm-hmm. Like that's it. And so when it comes to buying different foods, I'm looking at my ingredient list to make sure they're clean ingredients, no extra things, fillers, you know, whatever that's going to disrupt the gut, because you don't need anything extra like that happening in your life, because the diet that we eat already doesn't help with that. So I, like, again, I have fresh fruit and vegetables always stocked, things that the family likes. I make it flex wet, you know?
I was going to say, do you do this? I tell people all the time, ask them what instead of someone coming in, what makes me crazy is when someone in my house will say, I need a snack. Okay. Yeah. Well, ask the snack fairy. I will ask them periodically. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to get some stuff, some snacky things. Yeah. What do you want?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, my kids are getting used to, because like my son today, he knew I was going grocery shopping in the morning. He goes, listen, mom, you know that yogurt drink you get me? I'm kind of sick of it. Don't buy it anymore. I'm like, cool, dude. That's awesome. I'm like, do you want me to swap it for something else? He's like, maybe some yogurt. I'm like, okay. They already are used to me kind of asking them. So I get the staples. I call it the staples. Like I know my son likes these fruit and I know my daughter likes these fruit. But they will change, you know, their taste buds will change. So it's good to ask every now and then, what do you feel like? I even do it with my husband. I'm like, hey, honey, what is something that I haven't made in a while that you're craving? And so he'll tell me something, you know, because we can get into, I don't want to call it a cooking rut, but I want to call it a routine, because we want to make life easy. So we might end up cooking the same things week in, week out, and then realize, hey, I haven't made anything different for a while. And that's when you can go back to your family and be like, hey, what does everybody feel like eating? You're not the only one that's eating. It's a family issue. So go to each family member and be like, hey, so I'm compiling the list. What do you want to get? What do you want us to get?
Yeah. And I do that pretty much every week.
Yeah.
And there are certain things that I know they eat. They always eat baby carrots. They always eat, like, my husband likes these broken pretzels. He eats them. I don't even eat them. There are certain things that I know. And all I have to do each week is look and see how much he has of it, you know, Cheerios, plain Cheerios, stuff like that. I just look and see how much there is. And what I say in my house, I say the same thing. If you don't tell me what you want, then mom is just going to make what mom wants to eat.
Exactly. Yeah.
Usually they'll offer something. If I say, we're just going to eat what mom wants, they'll offer some advice. How do you feel about the leftovers?
I love leftovers. I was raised with leftovers. As holistic health coaches, we say cook once, eat twice. Okay. It's a way to make life easy. My mom always did that because my mom's a smart lady. She wasn't going to make dinner every single night from, you know, depending on what she wanted, you know. And my father, I remember, like, would ask, hey, where's the leftover whatever dish? She's like, that was in there for a few days. I had to get rid of it. He would get mad because my family was about the leftovers. And so I got my husband used to that, because I'm like, listen, I am not doing a brand new meal every night because we have a life. So I will make a big batch. And that way you're eating twice. Hey, maybe even three times. Because for me, my way of doing stuff is, put the work in first, all the work in, and then you can play. And so let me do all the work now. And then later I get to spend more time with the kids. I get to spend more time talking to my husband when he comes home from work.
I always tell people I like to make something Sunday and something Monday.
Yeah.
And then I always have something in my head for like Wednesday, Thursday if I need
Yes. Yes. But
what I'll say to my son or my husband each day is, okay, do you want this or this? This or this? And they can go back and forth, whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
And I have no issues with that. And my family, maybe I've just trained them, they don't question it.
Yeah.
But I have a lot of clients and community members who have told me that their families complain. And they're like, I don't want to eat that. People get really whiny about it. And then they feel guilty. And I'm like, I don't know why you feel guilty.
Yeah.
But some people get really caught up in the criticism of their own families. I mean, what's the solution to that if you just feel like you're under all this pressure to cook every day? Say you have five kids and your spouse. You know, and you just feel all this, there are no leftovers. I had someone tell me, because she has like five kids, there are no leftovers.
Yeah, wow. Okay, I know somebody who has four kids, a client of mine, and she will make a lot of food to make sure that she has a leftover. So, you know, get your math skills out and double up or triple up the recipe. And when it comes to feeling the guilt, this is what I'm going to say. There is so many emotions that we as women deal with on a daily basis. I don't think that feeling guilt about weeknight meals should be something that we need to deal with. I think it's if you're the one that's cooking and you're the one that's preparing everything, then everybody, and I don't mean to be sounding ungracious, can suck it up. If they don't like it, point them to the kitchen and let them make something for themselves. You have to kind of accept the role and the responsibility of not allowing every person's, you know, complaint and whine to dictate how you are going to behave. If this works for your life where you can't be cooking every day, some people like to cook every day and that's great. And for most of us who can't, then it is, okay, you don't want to eat this. This is what we have. We can make it in a different way. I could throw it in a taco shell. I could do this, 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 and this. But this is what's for food. If you don't like it, there's some bread. There's some almond butter. Go make yourself a sandwich. Because I think that we give in so much to the mentality of I have to serve all these people, do all these things. And then what do? We cut ourselves into a million pieces and we feel all the stress. But that's self-inflicted.
I think you and I are related.
It would be awesome, right? But I just think, and also having some grace with themselves. Can we just stop being so critical of ourselves for like 2 seconds and realize that just because someone is asking something of us doesn't mean that we necessarily have to bend over backwards to do it. If it's going to cause us even more stress. If it's something that you enjoy, that's an entirely different situation. But if this is causing actual friction in your household, then you need to deal with it head on. And you need to basically put your foot down and say, no, this is it.
It's hard when you are trying to change your diet and lifestyle and your family is putting up a huge fight.
Oh, yes.
I actually have a client who is vegan and she is very committed and she's been doing it for a year or two and her family is not.
Yeah.
And absolutely will not even have like a meatless Monday. Like they are just giving her a really hard time about it. And I told her, I was just like, if I were you, I would make my own food and then tell them it was their problem. I would.
Well, is she getting stressed out about it?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Is she loathing the cooking process?
The cooking, making lunches for the kids. All of it. It's almost like she avoids her kitchen and then she avoids going shopping. And then when she goes shopping, she gets in trouble for spending too much money. Because she doesn't have a plan. So she's just like, oh, the kids will eat this, you know, oh, I need this for my, you know,
right.
So, you know, it's a lose-lose for her all around.
That is difficult. First, I commend her for sticking to her choice of, you know, way of eating, you know, that's not easy, especially within a family that is really being resistant. You know, a client of mine had to go more of a vegetarian vegan route, but her family will kind of try some of the things. So she recently made this amazing jackfruit enchiladas. And everybody ate them and they could not believe it was not meat. So maybe, you know, it's coming up with recipes that mimic what animal protein is like using jackfruit, and, you know, smother it with some enchilada sauce and get some, you know, tortillas and do the whole recipe. There's a lot of things, because, you know, a lot of people weren't born being vegan or raised in a vegan family. So they have a learning curve themselves. And when it comes to their family members, I would tell her to just keep it real, real simple. Look, they got to eat their veggies and their fruits. So have that available. And as for the animal protein, if she doesn't have a crock pot, I would get one. Throw the protein in there so she doesn't have to touch it. Have a lot of it. Let everybody else doctor it the way they want to with whatever condiments, whatever. Get one of those like Lazy Susans and put all the little condiments and stuff on the table, and then everybody can just kind of pick what they want, right? Done. She can make the salad. She can make the vegetable side dishes. She can do that. And whatever they eat, they eat. Don't let the protein be the focus of the meal. Show them how vegetables and fruit and beans and all those other things can be the focus of the meal. I think it's just, you have to shift the way you're looking at it. And sometimes it means you need to take a step out of your situation and say, okay, I can look at this differently and I can make it work for me. But at the same time, I have to give myself some self-love here and be gracious with myself. And first thing is get rid of that stress. Find a way to make it adaptable to how she can do it. Because Liz, I get it. I've been cooking separate meals for years.
Okay.
And because I have picky eaters, my children are picky eaters. My son was very sensory eater. And, you know, when he was doing early intervention therapy and he was picky, they always said, give him a choice, which was great when he was little, but then he adapted to that too much. And then he thought mealtime was always a choice. So then we got ourselves into a little bit of a pickle because of that. So, you know, there's always modifying and changing along the way. My husband is gluten intolerant. He cannot have gluten. So there's never going to be gluten in this house, except for the fact that my kids don't like gluten-free bread and they want regular old bread for their sandwiches. So it's slow. Okay. It's slow. And yeah, our food budget sometimes gets a little nutsy too. And I get like hey honey, what happened here? I'm like, well, you know, you want fresh vegetables, you want fresh fruit. That's not going to last for 5 days. You need to replenish that after a few days. So, and then stocking up when there's a good sale. You know, when certain animal proteins go on sale, I stock up and put in the freezer so I don't have to keep buying it.
Well, and I told this girl, I live in an area where there's farms. So we have, they call them CSAs here?
Yes, yes.
So I can buy into a CSA and I know what farmer is growing my food and what field it's coming from. Like, so that's really, for me, that's very helpful.
Yeah.
I get an email telling me what food I'm getting every week. So that makes it helpful. I mean, that makes it easy for me.
Right, right.
I did tell her about buying the stuff in bulk though, because I've been known to buy with three other families, we'll get a grass-fed cow. Nice. Grass-fed cows are smaller.
Yeah.
So if three families split one, that's pretty much a whole cow.
Right.
But that'll last you a year or more.
Wow.
It's an investment.
That is great. No, absolutely. Yeah. But again, you're planning ahead. So I would tell her what I would tell anybody else if it's having trouble with meal planning and dealing with overwhelm and all of that. Two laws that I have. Don't go to the store hungry ever.
Oh, no. Yeah.
And go with a list. Even if it is a list for three things, believe me, there are times where I'm like, oh, I want to make this. Let me run. I put it on my phone and I'm like, okay, I need these two things, because I know I'll go into the store and be like, ooh, look at that. Ooh, look at that. Nope. You're in there for three things. Go in the store, get the three things and get out. So I don't go anywhere without my list, A, so that I don't forget an item, B, so that I stay on track with the recipes that I'm planning to make that week and I have all the ingredients that I need for it. You know, and that way it becomes less stressful. And you can actually execute what you plan to make.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is some of us actively resist the planning ahead.
Yeah.
I have a question for you. When you are at the store,
yeah,
I was going to ask you, what are some of the, when you're label reading, I'm a label reader, what are some of the things that you're looking for that you say are gut disruptors?
Yeah. I would look for things there's a bunch of, you know, additives and things that are in foods and there's a lot of them. So we would need like a whole entire episode to like go into them, but like for gums, for instance, like guar gum or xanthan gum, those have been shown that to create gut disruptive symptoms like loose stools or diarrhea, bloating, gas, things like that. So a lot of times you'll see these healthy foods, you know, whether it's a snack food or it's a baked good or whatever it is, and it says vegan or it says gluten-free or whatever. But if you turn over and look at that label and you see a bunch of ingredients that you're like, what is all of this? That's not great for your gut.
Okay.
For good gut health, you want simple ingredients that you know what's in it. Like one brand that I was just looking at the other day out of curiosity, I wouldn't get all their things, but like Simple Mills, I don't know if you've seen them. They have like these crackers and it's like, I think almond flour, cassava flour, rosemary or whatever, all things that I understand. There's no dextrins. It's not anything with the ending OSE, you know what I mean? There's no gums, things like that. When you see all of those things, that's when you want to stay clear of it, because over time that's really going to wreak havoc on your gut. So even though it's harder, try to find things that are cleaner in terms of your ingredients. And a lot of the time, I'm going to say, and people are not going to like me for it, homemade is always best. Because, I mean, even when you want something sweet. So, like, we have this event that we're going to tomorrow night for my husband's job. And so everybody's bringing something. And I'm like, okay, let's see what I'm going to bring. So I've got a couple things in mind, but I want to bring a dessert. So I'm going to make these no-bake almond bars. Super easy. It's entirely gluten-free, dairy-free. All of it. It's just basically mixing coconut flour with almond butter until you get a nice mixture with a little bit of maple syrup. And then you melt down dairy-free chocolate, put it on top and put it in the freezer, and it becomes like these bars, like this layered bar. And it is delicious. And it's how many ingredients? Four with the maple syrup. That's it. Homemade is always best because you know what's in it, but you still don't feel like you're depriving yourself from something that is delicious. It's just an extra step. But it will always be beneficial to make things homemade as opposed to buying it from the store, because you do have preservatives or additives or things to make it stay longer.
Okay. Well, and I did have one specific question for you about food. We could talk for days about sugar, real sugar, fake sugar, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But what do you know about dyes? Somebody asked me very specifically about dyes.
You know, honestly, I haven't looked really that much into it. I've done light reading on it over the years. I'm not a fan of dyes. I don't, you know, it's, you know, everything that I've read about, like the red dyes with ADHD and all that, I've read that. Yeah, I would have tried to avoid it. I would try to avoid anything that doesn't seem like it should be in your food. You want color? Go get some great colorful vegetables, you know, and try to get, you know, if you're going to get fish, don't get farm raised, get wild salmon or whatever it is that you're getting. But
well, and I always say, I just find it interesting that the European Union doesn't use all these dyes.
Nope.
Their food supply, they've removed the dyes from their food supply. Well, other things that we still have as well, they've removed.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. But the controversial things right now.
Yeah,
right.
I'm like, if that is, you know, good for that part of the world, maybe we don't need it. I don't know.
You know what? We could totally tangent off and have a whole discussion about it, but the food regulation laws here with what we're allowed to have is insane. What I say is, before you go under the whole like umbrella of overwhelm with information, the easiest thing to do is keep your food simple. When in doubt, go back to the way that we all used to eat, the way our grandparents ate and their parents. You know, my mom will say it all the time. People didn't have problems like this. All the things that you describe, the food issues, the allergy issues, all of this. She said, the food that I ate was fresh. The milk I drank was fresh. The cheese that I had was fresh. Everything was cooked and you ate it and that was done. You know, it wasn't so meat heavy. It wasn't so this heavy. There wasn't processed. Treats were saved for a special occasion. So our way of eating has changed. And I think that we need to go back to a simpler way of eating just to uncomplicate our lives and uncomplicate our digestive system, basically.
Well, while we're on the topic of digestive system, what are some of the signs that you're just having a gut disruption or there's something going on?
Oh, there are many signs, but if there's an issue, like if you're having digestive health issues, you can be having things like chronic diarrhea, constipation, gas, bloating. You could be having chronic headaches, or brain fog, memory issues, pure immune system, nutrient deficient. Also things like excessive fatigue, skin rashes, eczema, things like that. Cravings for sugar and carbs is a big one.
Oh, that's the thing. I mean, I hear more about, first of all, everyone I talk to, not everyone, 90% of the women I talk to are trying to lose weight.
Yeah.
And it's the craving thing. And we always talk about the ADHD brain and the dopamine and,
yes,
and everything.
Yes.
But what causes, you know, sugar, dopamine craving? Like, what causes that?
Well, first of all, let's look at the food in general. So the food that we eat, it's made to be craveable. There's this formula that makes food craveable. The way they make the processed food or food in general out there, when you're not making it, there is a formula of fat, sugar, salt content to make it more desirable. And that's why you crave it. Okay. You've heard that. Okay. When your gut is unbalanced, it means that your bacteria in your gut, we all have bacteria, right? So when it becomes unbalanced, it's going to want to feed the bad bacteria, and the bad bacteria feeds on sugar. So carbs become sugar, and all the other sugars that you're having feed it. So it continues to get worse, and it wants more and more and more. It wants you to feed it. And so that is a huge sign right there that there's an imbalance. If you're somebody that typically doesn't have sugar cravings, or all of a sudden you do have sugar cravings and you just find that you are unable to get under control of them, it's not exactly your fault, because there's an imbalance going on. So you've got to correct the imbalance so you can help the cravings. So you have to go deeper. It's so much deeper than just going on some sort of weight loss diet or whatever. You have to fix the inside. You have to fix the gut so you can actually start to see a result in actual weight loss.
So how do you start people off usually when you meet with them?
Well, everybody's very specific, you know, and individualized. So what I do with one person, I'm not going to do with another person, because I'm a strong advocate for one person's food is another person's poison. So I'm not going to tell everybody to do the same thing. However, there are some basic guidelines about gut health, like the obvious ones. You want to remove the processed food. You want to, you know, remove any sort of beverages like soda and things like that. You want to replace foods with clean, good proteins, good vegetables, good fats. You want to add some sort of probiotic or probiotic yogurt, possibly even some fermented foods, if like fermented vegetables, if your body can handle it. Again, it depends on the individual. You want to get back to balancing digestive system with pre and probiotic foods, as well as taking into consideration your stress levels. So you can change your diet, but then you got to look at the outside. What's also going on in your life that is unbalanced, that could be causing excessive stress? Because when we're in chronic stress mode, then we get into inflammation, and inflammation causes all sorts of problems. And a lot of the times people having gut issues is because there's a food that is probably aggravating their gut. So whether it's dairy or gluten, those are the two top aggravators and top inflammation causing foods. So I'll typically have people, you know, kind of remove that for a while, see how they feel, put it back in. But we really look at everything, and especially restoring the gut, you know. But a lot of the times, you can, if you're trying to change the way you eat, change what's on your plate. So it's kind of hard to feel like you want something after a meal. Like, you know, a lot of people go for dessert after the meal. If you have a nice clean protein or however you're eating, if you're, you know, figure out your plate with whatever diet there you're following, vegan or vegetarian, whatever, but have some good fats on there. And have a slow carb on there. Like a lot of people, I'll tell people, you know, throw a sweet potato in that meal, and you'll find that that sweetness that you're craving kind of goes away, and you're full because you've had those good fats and that protein. So your plate has to look, you know, a certain way for it to make sense. And then what, after a while, you know, throw in some low glycemic fruit. If you really, really, really need something, have some raspberries, have some blueberries, try to stay away from the higher sugar fruits. And you can slowly just try to make those changes so your body can get used to something. Staying, you know, if your child or yourself is sensitive to higher glycemic foods, and you want to follow a way of eating that is more lower glycemic, you know, and when you, and if you're not used to the high glycemic foods, yeah, it's going to affect your body for sure. Anybody who's been clean eating for a long time, or eating a certain way and they go and have something that their body hasn't had for a while, they could have, you know, a real reaction because it takes more work for their body to kind of process that. So again, it's so individual. Everybody's body tolerates things very differently.
All right. Well, I don't know. Anything else that we need to talk about? I came to the end of my notes.
I think honestly, especially when it comes to us women who are, you know, dealing with ADHD, dealing with planning and running a household, because many of us, we're not just doing one thing. A lot of us are having businesses or working jobs full time, raising a family and doing all of that. And it can become so, we can get so caught up with all of that stress that we forget to be mindful of what our needs are and the graciousness that we need to extend to ourselves. To not get so caught up in the do and make sure everybody else is happy that you've come to the end of yourself and you're burnt out. So now you're not only dealing with, you know, living with a diagnosis and all the symptoms that you may have to deal with, but then you're putting yourself in the circumstances and situations where you're causing excess stress. So meal planning and figuring out what you're going to eat should be the very last stressful thing in this world. It really shouldn't. And you know what? Breakfast for dinner is okay. And going out to eat every now and then, it's okay. You have to find a balance between living life and not driving yourself nuts and still being able to enjoy your family and just, you know, being you without having to have this constant thing in your head, but I got to do this, I got to do this, I got to prepare this and whatever. You know what? There are days you're not going to feel like cooking, and that's okay. And there are going to be days when you're going to want to order the takeout, and that's okay. Have some more grace with yourself. This is not a perfectionism. This is progress over perfection. So if we can just take each day one day at a time, and for that one good thing that we do, you know, celebrate that. Be like, hey, all right, we got through a day. I made a good meal, and whoever ate it, and whoever didn't, they still got fed somehow, and that's it. And not letting that be the catalyst that sends you off into a spiral of shame and guilt.
I totally agree with you. Where can people find you?
People can find me on Instagram at Intune with Anna Kay. And my website is www.intunewithannakay. There's a theme. Yes, there is. People get back in tune with their health, with their eating, with what's going on with their lives and balances. Their gut health, you know, there is something to be said about stress and life and getting so wrapped into it that we lose our ability to connect with ourselves and everybody else because we've let go of so much because we're under that constant, constant stress level.
And is that book, what's it called? Our Transformative
Journey? Our Transformative Journey, Our Gift of Healing to the World is available on Amazon. And as soon as I can work out my technology, I'll have it on my little swipey thing on my Instagram. I so love technology.
Okay. And I'm going to link to your coaching services too.
Yes, absolutely. Right. Yeah. Great. Cool. Thank you so much.
As you can tell, Anna is basically a treasure trove of information about nutrition and gut health. And her personal story about ADHD is pretty cool too. We talk about things like meal planning, everyday things like meal planning. We also talk about big, heavy emotional things too in the Enclave. In case you didn't know, the Enclave is my private group for ADHD women. It's a membership community. It is not a group. It is not a group on Facebook. Come and check it out. I will link to it in the show notes. If you're a mom like me and you're just trying to get through the summer, don't kill your children. I promise it will be okay. We've got some really fun guests coming just to round out the summer and keep us all entertained. So stick around. Like I always say, we are stronger together.